I says, if we can tidy up the frontage of Brooklands Road, it can just blend in into the trees and keep it tidy there. And the same was, except with the stock involved, there's no need to rebuild the fences. There's 22 entrances, I think, to the park, something like that.
And whereabouts did you live during this time? Did you have a house in the park or near the park?
Yes, I lived in that house, which is very similar in the design of the roof of this.
It was at the house in Victoria Road?
Yes.
Right, up on the top of the flats.
Yes.
Part up there.
Yes, it looks down into the park. It's all the sounds come up from the park. You can hear trouble. Of course, when you get down there, the trouble's often gone, but that was quite a good spot for a park house. Mr. Horton, that was built for Mr. Horton when he married a second time, and that was, I think, about the time he took the job in the park. He married a second time, and we lived there for 18 years, and then my wife hoped to move out into a home of her own to give her more security. The opportunity came when George Fuller came back to New Plymouth, who wanted to find a home for him. And we wanted to attract him to the job, a job that would enable him to look after the orchid collection, which is, I had always maintained, it was included in my original plan, but I did maintain that we'd have to have a competent orchid grower to look after the collection. Otherwise, we'd be keeping things that wouldn't flower and no one would do anything else. And the other big item in the report was the building up of a comprehensive collection of plants to introduce the public to a wider range of plant material than was generally available. To that end, well, we set out and we had to go out into other parks because there was a big tree, so there wasn't enough room for good guru. Park, but the glass houses was the report.
Were they still there? Were they there at that stage?
The glass houses, yes. Not the. There was a smaller begonia house where the Kibbe house is now.
Yeah.
George Kibbe was so thrilled one time that he just said his mind he wanted to have contribute to a begonia house, and that was the outcome, the one that we have there present. And the new development that they're suggesting is of going around was part of the original plan, was a balcony along the end of the glass houses, so that you could lead them up through two tunnels, and then take them along the end, and they could look down and get an extra view, and then go back through another house without having to pass the incoming crowd in the tunnels. And then actually we made an outlet out into the park, so that when there were big crowds, you could divert the people straight out into the park. And when there was just a normal crowd around, you could just let them use the tunnels as they wished. But with the big crowds, and when they were illuminated, that sort of thing, the illumination of the fernery was in part of the illumination of the park. But the use of the lights around the water and amongst the trees was the one great thing I thought that would draw the people to the park, the general public to the park.
And when did that start, the illumination of the plants?
Well, I believe that a good many years ago, in Mr. Horton's time, that the Salvation Army people put up a small string of lights and actually used the boats on the lake in the evenings for a short period. Anyway, and I suppose at different times and special occasions they possibly put up floodlights. I don't know really. But the opportunity came on the first visit of the Queen in 1954, and we illuminated the glass houses, I think, for the first time. But again,
with electric light, you actually strung. Was there electricity already in there?
Oh yes, yes. We had no like today. They've got all underground cable of sufficient size to cater with the illumination to the present day. But in those days, we had to be very, very careful with the cables and the long links that we didn't overload. And but the electricity department, I come back with the ideas, and the electricity department are just simply wonderful in the way they helped and made their contributions. They had a committee meeting, and they just made the discussions on what was possible and what could be done and what was feasible, and that sort of, they studied them out. And I couldn't have done it on my own, and I'm absolutely sure of that, but for the opportunity was there when the first visit of the Queen to do something extra special. And we did street decorations and things that we've never done since, as far as that goes. But
because she had a reception, didn't she, on the cricket ground, isn't that?
That's correct. Yes, yes.
I've seen photographs of that.
Yes, well, that one was that had royalty there before, but this was the first time of a reigning monarch. Like the Duke of Gloucester had been, the Prince of Wales was here in 1920. And that sort of thing. And the Queen Mother, she's been here a couple of times. I met her on the second occasion. And then they wanted something to commemorate the visit. Here was my opportunity again. Get the fountain. And then somebody wanted to put the fountain down at the Namuda Beach, and they wanted to put anywhere but in Pukekura Park. There was a whole host of letters criticizing the idea, without really knowing what it was like. And then in 1956, I think Easter 1956, we had the official opening. We had 9,000 people there. The area around the Fountain Lake, although we had enlarged it, was just chocker with people. They're on the move all the time. And the fountain wasn't completely working. I had to work it by hand. And I was in there pulling plugs and switches and winding handles to change the water flows and things like that, because the automatic wasn't completely working.
Mm.
And that's the reason why some people have said that they saw things that first night that they'd never seen since. Because I was in the little pump house, working the switches myself, doing the best I could, peeping out to see what I'd created. But it was a great effort. It was different to some of the others, which had large quantities of concrete work around it and that sort of thing. It was as informal as you could possibly make it.
Mm.
Mm. And that was to commemorate the visit of the Queen in 1954. It was opened, I think, Easter 1956, if I remember rightly. And then the Queen Mother, when she came, she went down to the entrance to the Fountain Lake to see it playing and to meet that paralysis lady.
Junope.
Yes, I was standing with Junope at the entrance there, and she came down with the was the mayor at the time. But I visited the Queen Mother's home in Scotland again, part of the tour, and visited her brother's place called Drumkilbo, another one of the older gardens in Scotland, and. So I could at least pass a few words.
Because it must be wonderful to see this fountain playing for the first time. Was the mechanism the same as it is now? The way that the pumps and things to make it work. I mean, how does that? Who designed those for the fountain? I mean, it's quite a large fountain. Is it the same fountain that is there now? Because there's a lot of water coming through there, and it's quite a magnificent fountain. I mean, is it exactly the same mechanism?
Same mechanism, yes. So there's been wear and tear, and there's a need of maintenance to get the accuracy of the jets. The clarity of the jets even.
Yes.
You'd have to take them out sometimes and dig fibre or other type of obstructions out of some of the jets. Those sorts of things affect the overall display, but the same mechanism. Trying to remember the name of the firm in Wellington that they did the one at the Botanic Gardens in Wellington. And I involved with most of the fountains in New Zealand of that period. And
so it's quite a sophisticated fountain, isn't it? But did you have lights on it at the same time? Because at the moment the lights are synchronized with the water's play. Was there lights on it originally?
Yes. We had a bit of problem with the. Particularly swans or geese, the bigger birds, waterfowl, and they get up on top there.
Hello. We've just got Mr. Goodwin's daughter-in-law has just come in, so we're just about ready to finish up this bit of the tape, actually, too. We're just about to finish this side as well, Mr. Goodwin. So. If you'd like to just, is there anything more you'd like to say about the fountain? Because it is a space. It looks to me to be quite a sophisticated piece of equipment.
Yes, well, as far as the simplicity of the fountain bowl on an island in the centre of the lake, I had seen some pictures of very powerful fountains in Russia. Where they sent up high jets and spread them wide, far and wide. And although we have breezes in the park, it just couldn't be, in New Plymouth, it would be hard to find a better sheltered position than that one. And so that was the main reason we stuck to our guns and it wasn't pushed down to the beach where it would be even more subject to wind damage. It can be quite magnificent in a twisty gale, and you get the jets going up and the wind blowing and twisting it around. But it's something you wouldn't want to watch all the time, but it's absolutely fascinating. And the fact that you can get formal combinations of water effects and lighting effects.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, you know, as Well, we had to keep within our finances.
Yes.
But keep the cost down as much as possible. But,
well, it certainly brought a lot of pleasure to a lot of generations and a lot of people, and it will continue doing that too.
Well, the other advantage was that the one in Wellington was for the 1940 Centennial Exhibition, and it was only made in galvanised iron, whereas all the parts in this fountain are copper and brass. So it's got a far longer life. The Wellington one, I think, has been already been converted.
I think it has. Yes, I think it's actually been upgraded, hasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. It's a bit of wearing metals and that sort of thing.
Well, it looks as though you're about to have your lunch. So we'll actually finish up here for today. And thank you very much.